chemistry or math. So those are the two subjects that Hilchos Taruvos, and to a lesser extent, Basar Bacholim, primarily Taruvos, deal with. One of the most complicating things about learning Hilchos Basar Bacholim and Taruvos is that the ordering of things is absolutely impossible. The reason, I don't know why the Torah wrote things the way he did. I have some ideas. But in order to study Hilchos Taruvos, which begins normally with Siman Sadiches and goes into Siman Kofidal, and in order to study Hilchos Taruvos, you need certain information that you might have learned in Hilchos Basar Bacholim, which are the preceding simanim from Siman Pei Zayin to Siman Sadi Zayin. The problem, of course, is that in order to learn Hilchos Basar Bacholim, there are things that you need to know from Hilchos Taruvos, which actually follow Basar Bacholim. And the truth be told, at first glance, it's completely puzzling. Why would the Torah have written Hilchos Taruvos after Hilchos Basar Bacholim? Because after all, what is Basar Bacholim in essence? It's an example. It's a subcategory of Hilchos Taruvos. It has certain things that are specific to eating. Of course, when we talk about a mixture of Basar and Chazir, we don't ask, how many hours after you eat the basar can you eat the chazir? Or after you eat the chazir, can you eat the basar? Obviously, certain things are specific only to basar b'challah. But I would have thought that taruvos, from a conceptual perspective, is the overarching category, and basar b'challah is a specific manifestation. And the reason why, and this may disappoint many of the Gush alumni, maybe others too, the reason why Hilchos Taruvos is after basar b'challah is because the Torah wasn't truly thinking conceptually when he wrote it. He was thinking topically in a different way. So the previous parts of Yerideya that we don't do after dealing with Shchita and Terefos and Melicha then deal with Hilchos Beitzim, Hilchos Dagim, you know, what animals are kosher, what are not. So the next thing, we go to the animal product Basar Bacholim. That's probably why the Torah ordered it that way. It is not conceptually the logical way of approaching things, but that's the way he did it. When you look at the Simanim of Hilchos Taruvos, and I might just take a couple of minutes now as a way of giving you a little background to help you as you prepare stuff, that for the new Gush alumni, you know that I'm teasing when I say that. But to give you an overview and to see what the structure is, it doesn't all fit together in the way we have naturally ordered. And that's not a good thing, by the way. It would have been nice if the order really was in a certain consistent way. So it's very hard, and this is very hard to learn Hilchos Taruvos before you've learned Basar Bacholim, and it's very hard to learn Basar Bacholim before you learn Hilchos Taruvos. There's nothing we can do about that. It means that in this case, you particularly need a Rebbe. You need someone who has information, because they've gone through the process, they learned it from their Rebbe, so that when you encounter things that you don't know yet, because they've already been discussed, but we're starting later, because we have to start later, so that's I will try to provide all that information. But that is probably one of the biggest challenges when you're studying or what's known as Isser V'Hetar, as we call it. That's the term that's used. One note about the Torah itself, although I'm not sure how true in the suborder, does anyone know what the Torah on Yerideya, from the beginning until the end of Hilchos Nida, is based upon? It's based upon an earlier work. I don't think the order doesn't follow exactly within the subunits, but the larger thing is based upon another work. Does anyone know what that is?
The Rush.
No, it's not. The Rush was the Torah. For those who don't know the Torah, even though my biography, if I do it before she will have a little more information. The Torah, Rav Yaakov ben Asher, was the Rashi's son. Right? He wrote the four halakim of the Torah, Orchaim, Yerideya. I know what they are. I'm trying to remember which the order he wrote them in. It's clear from Hakdamos. I think it's Eben Ezer Choshe Mishpat, but I kind of have it backwards. But the Torah, when he wrote his different halakim, which later became the same the way Beis Yosef or Beis Yosef Karo wrote on them, and then he made the Shulchan Aruch pattern upon that. So the Torah did not create things from scratch. In the case of Yerideya, there are large parts of it. The last part, Hilchos Avelos, is based upon the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam, that follows the exact order of the Torah Sa'adam. The first part of the Torah follows the Rashba's Torah Sabayis. Now, the Rashba, you should know, once we mention this, the Rashba wrote a work on Isser V'Hetar called the Torah Sabayis. I took a Jewish history course when I was in Yeshiva College. It wasn't, I like person a lot, but it wasn't a very good Jewish history course, so I'm never really sure whether all the facts that I was taught are actually historically true, but what I was taught is that the Rashba was planning on writing an entire work on halacha, on practical halacha, but his project got derailed because it came under harsh critique from his contemporary, the Ra'ah, Rav Aaron Halevi. I'm not sure that that's true, but be that as it may, the Rashba's Peres Habayis serves as the underpinning for the first like two volumes of the three halachim of the Yoredeya. The Rashba wrote three works. First he wrote something called the Toras Abayis HaAruch. Then he wrote something called the Toras Abayis HaKatzar. And then, after the Ra'ah, wrote his Hasagos. And what did the Ra'ah name his Hasagos? What was his sefer called? If the Rashba wrote the Toras Abayis, the Ra'ah wrote the Bedek Abayis. And then an anonymous work appeared called the Mishmeres Abayis, defending the Rashba from the Hasagos of the Bedek Abayis. What we know from one of the Rashba's tubas, he makes reference to what I wrote in the Mishmeres Abayis. So we know it was the Rashba. He gave away the secret. Be aware, the tour does not have the Torah Sabayis Aruch. He only has the Torah Sabayis HaKatzar. The Beis Yosef will point this out in many places. Just be aware of that. So anyway, the tour wrote his work on Yoredeya, the first two thirds, heavily based upon the Rashba's Torah Sabayis. And he's going to quote Torah Sabayis HaKatzar frequently. If you have the chance, when you're in the Beis Medrash, go to the shelf, find the Torah Sabayis, just to familiarize yourself. You'll see the main body is the Torah Sabayis Aruch, and this small print on the sides, the Mishmeres Sabayis and the Katzar, the Bedek Habayis and the Mishmeres Habayis. Okay, now, let's talk about a very basic overview of the Torah Silpas Tarovas and what's in it. So I mentioned before, and I put on the sheet, the question of chemistry and mathematics. Hilchos Taruvos deals with these two kinds of things. You've already had a little bit of an entree into Simon Kuftes. Can anyone tell me when is Taruvos, what is chemistry and what is mathematics?
Avram? So mathematics is a system using the rules of logic that we use to account for and calculate things.
Okay. I mean in the context of your idea. When I talk about mathematics, it's chemistry. Zach?
I'd say like Rove is mathematics and like Basel of Shishim is like chemistry.
You're right. You are correct. But that's you're putting the details as opposed to the branches. You're correct in what you're saying. Noah?
Mathematics is when it's a numbers game. You just have to, you know, once you have a majority in all probability, if you pick any piece, you have a piece that's a heter. Whereas chemistry is where you have something that's more fluid, where it's not about what's, you know, a probabilistic choice, but it's you've made this new entity that might have a different status or it might have the same status.
Is it here?
I'd say that math is when it's like the numbers like row of two-thirds versus chemistry is like, you know, tin ta'am or like the
so that's correct. Chemistry in Hilchos Taruvos is about ta'am. And I'll explain this in a second. Whereas, I'll write up all of it. I don't have a marker. You have a marker here by any chance?
Do you want to?
What's that?
I have a marker.
Thank you. So chemistry is about flavor, about ta'am. Whereas mathematics is about all the probabilities. Shishim is a number, but you're correct, Zach. It's in the realm of chemistry. It's not about establishing probability. It's about establishing flavor. Now, this is a chart that's a very simple chart, but basic terminology that you should know, and it's important to think about this Siman and Siman Sadiches as well. When we talk about a mixture, there are two kinds of mixtures. One is called min bimino, and one is called min b'she'eno mino. What is min bimino? Someone want to define that? Kesser?
Two things of the same taste.
Okay, so I'm going to accept that it's based upon ta'am. This is actually a contentious issue, even though it shouldn't be. By logic, you're correct. The Rambam says something very funny. The Shach goes after the Rambam. It's in Siman Sadiches. Let's assume intuitively it means ta'am. Min bimino refers to whether two things taste the same. Min b'she'eino mino presumably is the same thing. They have a different Then, you have a tarovis that's known as lach b'lach, and a tarovis that's known as yavish b'yavish. And these terms are a little bit misleading. If I have flour, let's say I have yashan flour, and I have hadash flour, and they get mixed together, is that a tarovis of lach b'lach or yavish b'yavish? So there's a Bach, I think, that the Shach quotes, and I don't think anybody really argues on it. There are others who say the same thing. That's called Lach B'Lach. Even though, and this is Yoni, according to Lach's tradition.
Oh, no, 130. Is that one?
So Lach B'Lach and Yavesh B'Yavesh are not defined technically as dry or wet. Now, it happens to be a tarobus that's lach, that's wet, is almost definitionally going to be Lach B'Lach. Whereas Yavesh B'Yavesh, you have to be dry to be Yavesh B'Yavesh. You don't have to be wet in order to be Lach B'Lach. No,
oil and water.
What?
Oil and water.
Okay. Anyway, can someone correct him and explain why he's wrong?
it's not a tarobes.
Thank you. It's not a tarobes. Mm.
Okay.
You were too clever by a half. Okay. Now.
What a colloidal suspension.
Okay. Anyway, now.
You're going
to
eat that?
First, let's just imagine different kind of mixtures here. You can understand how you have a mixture of lach b'lach, mimino, mimishaino mino. Let's take ground meat. You could have ground beef with kosher ground beef with nevela ground beef. That's a tarobis of min b'mino and lach b'lach. You could have ground pork that gets mixed into ground beef and it all gets mixed up together. That's called min b'sheino mino of lach b'lach. Now, yavesh b'yavesh seems pretty straightforward to how you have min b'mino. How do you have yavesh yesh b'mino? Well, I have three pieces of meat and one of them is treif and two of them are kosher and they get mixed up. And they're identical in their appearance. How do you get a tarobis of min b'sheino mino of yavesh b'yavesh? Okay, here's the deal. Okay, I have a banana that's orla. It could be orla. Let's put that. Okay, I have a grape that's orla. I have an apple and I have an orange. Okay, I put them in a box. I shake up the box. I mix it all around and I open the box. Is that a tarobes of min b'sheino mino yavesh b'yavesh? Why is that not a tarobes of min b'sheino mino of yavesh b'yavesh? Ellie? What? Yeah, it's not a tarobes, right? That was my point to know. Oil and water, they don't mix, but precisely because they don't mix, there's no tarobes. You just remove the oil, you know, and you're done. It's not totally, a little bit probably, although for whatever reasons might get mixed in. But bottom line is, how do you get a tarobes of yavesh b'yavesh, min b'sheino mino? Because yavesh b'yavesh means the items stand discrete from one another. They don't blend. So all you need to do is, you know, it's an old joke I can't say about whom, because it's not nice. There should be no disfavored ethnicities, even if they're more prominent. But put out your hand. The joke will put out your hand. No, one hand, okay? Watch carefully. Okay, which is your hand? That was supposed to be the entrance exam to University of X, whatever ethnicity is being made fun of. But the point is, why you have no problem of telling which hand? The answer is because your hand. It's not called the tarobes, right? It's not like I don't know if you still see it on the streets of Washington Heights, where there's a ball under a cup, you know, you can't tell which cup. No, you know which it is. So if it's a grape, this orla, and there's a grape and a banana and an apple and an orange in the box, it's not a tarobes. They're distinguishable. So how do you get yavesh b'yavesh?
I forget.
So that's the shop will have two possibilities. That's one of the possibilities, which is, you have an apple, a banana, and an orange, and one of them is orla, but you don't remember which one. Okay. The perhaps more interesting one, that's the one without, I think, out any problems, even though it's kind of uninspiring. Yes, Adam?
I guess, what about two things that are like obviously discrete, but they look alike, like two different pieces of meat?
So that's a really interesting case there. Because you're right, that would be a tarobis, except for the complicated thing is that as soon as you taste the piece, you know what you're eating.
Not really. Like if it's two different, no, it's just one was shafted, one wasn't. It's the same season, the same.
No, but then that's mimimino. Is it beef? In other words, if I have a piece of pork that looks like beef, but as soon as I taste it, I'm going to know that I'm eating the pork. So that's more common. So the other case that they talk about is when you have, we'll deal with it, it's in Simon Kof Dalet, when the pieces are so small where they're very hard to distinguish, but theoretically they do stand aside. They don't actually, in other words, sometimes you get, you know, flour, you can't, theoretically, a microscope you could separate, but imagine that you had
I don't know. I mean, Cheerios are big enough to distinguish. But imagine you had something that was really so hard to pull apart, but the pieces could theoretically be separated one by one. That may be called a taroves of yavesh b'yavesh and mimishe domino. But let's stick with Alter's case for the moment. Okay, we're not really going to focus on that. That's obviously, guys, a very rare occurrence. It's rare to have a kind of a mixture, so we're only going to talk about min bimino and of yavesh b'yavesh. Okay, now here is the crucial point. What do you need? Whenever we talk about bittul, we want to know what is required. Well, let me say something else. Chemistry is about bittul. Mathematics may be about rov and sfeikos. Might be another way of saying it. In other words, I may be overstating the case there, but at least one major position in our synod, it's all about probability. It's not about what we call bittul. But leave that aside for the moment. Basic knowledge that we're going to encounter in synod tzadiches, and you want to get this really down. You want to know the terminology, and you want to know what is the status of the midaraisa, what's the status of the rabbanon. Let's say, take the simple case. Mimimino, lach belach. So I have kosher ground beef, I have nevela ground beef, they get mixed together. What is required min haTorah in order to be allowed to consume it? What proportions are necessary?
Rove.
Okay, so we're going to, the top track will be doraisa, we'll call it, you need a rove. What is required is a rabbanon, if anything different?
160.
So you require shisha. Now, I'm not going to, in the past I've done this, I don't want to spend any time on this. Where does shishim come from? Where in the Mishnah is shishim have? Don't even answer the question. The answer is it isn't. Tanayim don't have, you won't see the word shishim. The early Amoraim, Rav and Shmuel probably also don't use shishim. It's only later shishim comes to being. What is shishim a shorthand for, in theory?
Gets rid of the tam.
The Mishnah has a term. Harezeh b'no seima. 60, the Gemara says, is a shear that the Chacham felt that almost all these Yisurim are batal b'shishim. Halacha l'maisa, which is not really l'maisa, are there any Sfaradim in the shear? Not any Sfaradim anymore. For Sfaradim, it's true technically, although I don't know if they still do it. If you had treif that got mixed into kosher, so you call me with the shayla and I say, okay, can you tell me how much got mixed in, if we have shishim, great or not? A Sfaradi could go to his non-Jewish neighbor and say, Mac, could you please taste this for me? And if he tastes it, forgetting about all the details in that, and says, don't taste any lard in this, you can eat it, even if you don't have shishim. That's the way the Mechaber Paskins, the Ramaz Machan, we don't ask non-Jews, whatever the reason is, but that's the halacha. It's not about shishim, it's about tam. Shishim is only used as a proxy, and it's only used, according to the Rambam, for example, you're only allowed to use shishim when you don't have a guy, when you don't have anybody who can taste it to verify. I'll give you an example that both the Mechaber and the Ramah allow, but later Acharonim don't. Although I don't know if this will ever just come up. I've got to come up with a case of this. Okay. Let's say one of you foolishly decided to accept upon yourself to be a Nazir. Okay? And then someone is cooking, and you're coming over, and they know, of course, they're not going to serve wine at the table, and they're not going to give you grape juice, and they're not going to put grapes out. But then they accidentally use wine in the cooking. Now the question is, are you, the Nazir, allowed to consume it? According to both the Mechaber and the Ramah, the Balabayas can taste, not a Nazir, the Balabayas can taste it. If he doesn't taste the Tam of Yayin, so the Nazir can consume it. That's the way it is. So Shishim is only a proxy. We don't ask why. Well, when we do Tzadi Ches, we'll see it. We don't use Tam either, even Tam of Heter, right? When you're dealing with Isser, a Jew can't taste it, but a Goy in theory could taste it. But to the extent if we were using Tam, Shishim would not be what we're looking at. We're looking at Tam. Because we don't use Tam, we use Shishim as its proxy. CJ.
So what would Shishim even mean by mino? Because it's the same Tam anyways.
So that's why, obviously, in the Torah, there can't be any issue of Tam by the mino. It can only be determined by quantity.
But even me, the Rabbanan, what does shishim mean? Meaning,
60 tons.
But why do you have 60, why do you need that?
Give me a second. Avram?
Yeah, two questions. One is just understand this. So say you were to put, like, like a drop of a tray of hot sauce, but like one that's really strong. But it's like, say, 1/1000.
So what do you think that then would be?
It's not clear. I don't understand if shishim is like a, is, you know, like once it's hits shishim, we're good to go, or once, or even if it's less than shishim, but you can still taste like it goes in.
Does anybody want to venture an opinion on this? Aldo?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's what, in other words, precisely as shishim is not a magical number, it's not halacha moshmi sinai. We're going to learn about something that's called a milsa da'avida l'ta'ama, a davar ha'asui l'ta'am, something that's made to give flavor, and that will become, that in fact is asur. Interesting case, I'm not going to talk about it now, we will talk about it. What if you had salt that you salted meat with and it's absorbed blood, and now the salt falls into your pot? And let's say there is shishim connected to the volume of the salt, but you can taste the salt. Something to think about. Not right now. That's it. You've been waiting.
What if you give it to a guy and like they say they don't taste it, but like, you're much better at tasting lard?
Let's wait till we get to the discussion. That is discussed. Of what, who was asked to taste it? What are their... The Gemara uses the term kfela. It doesn't say goy, it says kfela. You know what a kfela is? Rashi says a nachtom. What's a nachtom?
Baker?
Yeah, or cook. We tend to think of it as baker for various reasons. The Nishnayis Techala, it means a food preparer. It's also used for a cook in Rabbinic Hebrew. So a nachtom, is it used in modern Hebrew at all? It's probably an ofer now, probably. But the word, but the question is, when the Gemara uses the word kfela, Kfela Arama'a, a non-Jewish cook, does it have to be a professional or not? That's a machlokas harishon.
CJ, the question?
It was business.
Okay. So, shishim here, by min bimino, is not it's per se tam. There's no way to taste it. You know why? Because they have the same taste. Right? If you have your kosher ground beef and your non-kosher ground beef mixed together, and you want to know whether you can taste the non-kosher ground beef, and you give it to the guy, what's he going to tell you? Tastes like ground beef, yeah. You can't distinguish. It's indistinguishable. Okay. Now, let's talk about mimishim in lach balach. Now, you know what the din is lemaisa. What's the din lemaisa? Which means even midrabanan. What is required? I know I'm purposely starting this way. What is required by two things of a different flavor? Shishim. Okay, shishim is required. All right, and the reason, obviously, here you can understand, is to nullify the tam. What is the din min haTorah by lach talach? By mimishin lina. Another way of putting this is, what is the din of what's known, and this will become more complicated, of tam ki'ikar. There is a principle the Gemara is going to have, that tam is ki'ikar. Let me give you a case that I think all Rishonim would agree is defined as tam. Supposing I take onions. I make soup. But let's say the members of my household are very finicky and they don't like anything in their soup. They don't want vegetables, they don't want chicken, they don't want anything. They want clear soup. So I take onions or I take my chicken and I put it in a cheesecloth bag. Okay, there's no cheese there. The chicken's left it to do, even in the rabbana. I put it in and I put it in the water and I boil the water. And now, the water tastes like chicken soup. It has the flavor of onions of some kind. Now, when I'm done, what do I do with the soup? Well, I pull out the cheesecloth bags, and I'm left with soup. Is the chicken in the soup? The answer is no. You could go fishing all day in the soup, and you're not going to pull out, like a rabbit out of your magic hat, you're not going to pull out a chicken. There are no onions. You're not going to pull out any mamushes of the onions that you would say, oh, this is an onion in the soup itself. That's, everybody agrees, is called ta'am ki'ikar. Warning, are there any chemistry majors here? Ilana knows a chemistry major. Yes, Josh, I'm sorry. I know that from a chemical perspective, the fact that you can taste the chicken in the soup and in the soup means that particles have entered there. I don't know if Chazal fully appreciated or the Rishonim with the distinction when they created this thing between ta'am and mamashos. I don't know if they understood that Tom was mamushus, but mamushus that you just couldn't see. Maybe they did, or they didn't. It doesn't matter. For our purposes, that's how we're going to distinguish between what's called ta'am versus mamushus. Mamoshus might be, I don't know how you would describe it, but the quantity that you can feel, that you can touch, you can see, okay?
I was going to say, isn't the fact that it looks like soup and not a bowl of water?
Leave out color for the moment, but the onions, let's say, you can't see, but you can taste. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's this is what's known as ta'am ki'ikar. The Gemara says that ta'am is ki'ikar, that the ta'am of the iser being there is like the ikar of the iser is there. But the question is this din the Rabbanan or even Doraisa? So there are a broad range of shitas, and you think there are only two possibilities, but actually many more than two possibilities, and it's going to keep us busy in Siman Tzadi Ches, which is probably the next Siman we're going to do. But let's assume for the moment that Keith likes simple, like the way we paskin, l'chumra, that it is the Doraisa. And let's say, according to Rabbeinu Tam, what Rabbeinu Tam says, not the way he's quoted by the Torah, Rabbeinu Tam, if I have even a small amount, I have a small amount of Isser mixed into Heter, and I can taste the flavor, let's say I pulled out the stuff, and let's say it was chazer schmaltz, it was lard, that I flavored my thing with, but I pull it out, there's less than 1/60th, Rabbeinu Tam says you get malchus for eating it. Some Rishonim say it's asur midaraisa to eat, but you don't get malchus. For our purposes, let's say now it's a big machlok, some Rishonim, but we would call it deoraisa. Keep things simple. Also,
shishim would also be deoraisa.
Correct. Yes, but shishim is enough.
It's both, yeah.
Correct. In other words, the point is, you're correct, Alden. These are the same. In other words, midaraisa and midarabanan, you require shishim. They didn't increase the amount. But shishim here means bitul hatam, whatever that is. Correct. Now, the din d'oraisa, according to the majority of Rishonim, the way Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch is machria, the din d'oraisa and the din d'rabbanan are the same. You must have bitul hatam. Okay. Fine. Now, let's talk about...
So just any significant amount that you can taste out of shishim?
Mid d'oraisa, for those Rishonim, if you can taste the iser, if its taste, its flavor is noticeable... then it's also minatorah. There are a lot of details within that. But for the moment, leave it at that. Okay. The Torah is going to discuss this issue. I'm going to leave this aside for the moment. I'll ask your opinion when we're done with this part. But now, here's the issue we are dealing with, which is the machlokas of Rishonim, although the overwhelming majority of Rishonim paskin one way. What is required if I have a mixture of three pieces of salami? They're not particularly distinctive. When I say, you can't tell the difference between them. They're not a davar chashuv. And my salami, I have two pieces that are kosher, and one piece is treif. Don't think, I never actually had this case, but this could happen. And halacha would shock people. Imagine that the caterer delivers, let's take salamis, three salamis to the affair, and they cut them up. They're slices, and you know they're handing it out from behind the thing, and they've thrown away all the packaging, and now all of a sudden the caterer realizes, he looks in the garbage, and he sees that one of the packages was Hebrew National. And in case you weren't sure, even I think the conservative movement at least used to, but they still hold that Hebrew National is treif. Okay, so lots of treif. So when look at one, two of the packages are A&H, and one of them was Hebrew National, and the caterer says, "Oh my God, what do I do now? What do I do?" And what is the halachist's answer to this?
Don't eat two pieces or three pieces.
Nothing. The answer is nothing. It's horrifying to think that. Yeah. But I picked salami because you're not going to cook it.
Unless it's like it's a chumra.
What?
Doesn't
that
mean
that? I don't think we hold that. We have to give one piece to the dogs. I mean, it's hard to know how we hold. All right. But just an interruption here. How does one determine the halacha?
Google?
Okay, so Ellie, that's impressive for someone who hasn't studied halacha with me, you said. Puk chazi mayim advar. Now, there's obviously open the Shulchan Aruch. You look at the Nosei Kelim, it will give you a good idea. But in the end, when you're not really sure what we do, you look at what the minhag is. The problem, of course, is in this case, this is a milsa de lo shchicha. And by a milsa de lo shchicha, you can't talk about what the minhag is, right? How many shailas, you know, has a rabbi gotten of this of Siman Kuf Tes, and the answer is probably very few. Very few. So, but I think the Rambam acknowledged that as a chumra. You don't have to, in this case, I would say, the caterer, you know, it's going to be very embarrassing, so the caterer doesn't have to be machmir, so I wouldn't allow, I would just make sure what would I do? I would make sure that as they are dispensing things, they never have a sandwich. With, you know, they go through them one by one, so you never have a sandwich with a piece from each of the three salamis. That's all you want to make sure. Outside of that, you don't have to worry. I know, it's shocking, right? Why is it? Tell me, somebody tell me why it's shocking. Zach, why is it shocking?
Because I thought, like, you telling me it's not kosher, it's
kind of
like, it's
Tommy
or Michonne. No, it's
not. Zach, I'm only kidding my response, but the truth is, the hint of the idea that you're expressing there is actually alluded to in the Beis Yosef and the Siman, about the Maharami Rutenberg's practice, why did he give one to the dogs? It has to do with the nature of the Mahalas source as opposed to any other issue. That's very nice, but no, I think it's horrifying because even though it's mutter, you standing on the outside look in the aggregate and you look at, there's somebody in this room who is right now eating non-eating Hebrew national salami, right? In other words, you know that somewhere in this room going on that you are feeding them non-kosher meat and it's mutter, right? There's something, and look, it's the quintessence of the Rosh Hashita. You don't have to hold like the rush here, right? The rush. What does the rush say I can do with my three pieces of salami? I take a club piece of club roll. I put some mustard on. I put some pickles on. I take my three pieces of salami. I put them on. Munch, munch, munch. I swallow them in one fell swoop, right? The rush says that that's mutter, and the Ramah, by the way, holds meikar adin. That's how we paskin. We try to be machmir, but the Ramah says bidina. If you cook them together, we'll see why the cooking becomes an issue. The Ramah says it's mutter to eat. Yeah. How you look like shell shock.
Yeah, just like crazy that we know somebody eating that.
No one would eat it. Just throw it all out.
Did you have to be kosher?
Because you're not a good, Torah Jew. Good Torah, you're not a Brisker for sure. A Brisker looks at that and says, and Brisker says that meat is kosher. Because the halacha has declared kosher, it transforms you. By the way, which is what the Rush says. The Rush says, "Is an epoch liyasev." Right? You have to overcome your slavish desires. You have to suppress them to do the will of God, and you eat that salami sandwich according to the Rush. Okay? But that's why it's so shocking to us, because we know that in the world of reality, it's one thing. But the halacha says no. This is mut. CJ.
So if I have three pieces of meat, one of them is not kosher. So I can, butthole barov, I can eat one of them because I don't know which one it is. Once I eat one, what about the other two?
The answer, I'll give anybody who thinks they know the answer to that question, I'll give you one shot. But it's going to be discussed. When you see the Rosh Bashi, it'll be obvious. Does anyone want to take a stab at that? Ellie?
If I remember correctly, isn't there a theory about
Rishonim,
whether you can eat one, two, or all three?
There are four shitas in Rishonim, but the Mechaber, there is one shita that says that one person shouldn't eat all three, but it, for sure everybody would hold that one person can eat one and then eat another. That's for sure. One and then two. Why? And let's just say the fact is that Tosos, who says that one person shouldn't eat all three, I think Tosos on the Maamar Kamos. Tosus, I don't think, says the Bavada. He just says Ulai, something like that. Right, Shem.
Yeah.
So, but the Rashba's position, unlike the Rush, is you could eat all of them, but you can't eat them at the same time. Why does the Rashba say that it's okay? Let's wait till we get there. Let's not jump ahead.
Do you have to, worry about, Baltashas? Should you, Bedavka eat all of them? Or, if you feel uncomfortable?
I'm joking. Althor is correct that any from Jew would probably just throw them all out.
But
that is correct.
That's
Baltashas.
But then you
can hold
the
same. Baltashas. So I want to give you briefly. Let's not go any further than this. A halachic analysis. The answer is Baltashas is not usur when there's a tzarech adam. And let me give you an example. What happens if you have a chola on Shabbos? It's a famous sugi in Yoma. You have a chola on Shabbos, and you have a choice. You can either shech an animal and give him kosher meat, or you can give him the vela meat that's there already. Now, Shech, normally we say the rule by Pikuach Nefesh is that you try to do the smallest averus first. Machilin or so hakal hakal p'chila. Right? If you have chelev and you have nevela, you give nevela because chelev is kares, nevela is only a lot. So is it better to be Michal Shabbos to feed him or give him nevela? And the answer is a whole bunch of Rishonim say you can shech an animal to do so. Now, why is that so? So that's the interesting question. But one of the answers given, I think it's by the Rush, is that it's so ma'us to him that you can't really insist that the chola eat this non-kosher stuff.
Now, that might, you might argue, if you want to be technical, that means that it's still part of pikuach nefesh, because he just can't eat the nevelim, although he really could if he were hungry enough. But that idea being expressed is that even there, the halacha recognizes the aesthetic or visceral impact. If you want to know another story that never actually happened, it never actually happened. It's not true, but it's a Gush press conference that never happened, I think, where they asked Rav Aaron, Rami Tal Zichrono Bracha, if you were on a desert island alone and you were dying and you had to either eat non-kosher meat, non-kosher meat, or your fellow there who had died already to eat human flesh, which would you do? And the way the story is told, which I believe is not true, is that Rav Aaron said, you know, Nevela is Nisar Lav, Pesar Adam is only Nisar Asay, according to Sar Mishon. So you have to eat Pesar Adam. And Rav Amital was just in shock. And I don't think the story is true. I think it was trying to project certain things on personalities. But assuming that the story even happened, right, you would understand Rav Aaron's response. It makes perfect rational sense, right? So what was Rav Amital's response? The response is there's some things that are so obviously wrong. Right? The idea that you're going to expect a person to eat human flesh is just, it is so ma'us, it's inconceivable the halacha with the man that you choose, you know, A over B in that particular case. So that's why it's not baltashnis. It's not baltashnis.
What if I don't like crust?
What?
What if I don't like crust?
Okay. So anyway.
You should be eating bread to begin with.
When they have the Brisker Olympics, right, the final event that's going to separate the men from the boys is this particular scenario. Right? All right.
But it's not going to be hypothetical. They'll give you a table. I'll show you a table with a spread.
Isn't it all austere to me?
Well, yes, it's awesome. That's in Sinan Tzadikas. Okay. All right. Okay, enough Leitonos. We don't take it to Leitonos, it's not even pertinent. Now, Yavesh B'Yavesh, what is the din min ha-Torah? What is the din min ha-Torah of a Tarovis of Yavesh B'Yavesh min b'mina? So instead of taking my kosher meat and my treif meat and mixing them together, I have separate slices of meat. So what must the din be? Nobody argues on this point.
So
it has to be rov. That's clear. Whatever the din the rabbanon is, it has to be rov. It's not worse than a lach balach when it blends. I think. Well, I shouldn't say that. Is that obvious? It's not obvious. Why is it not obvious?
Could we just eat it?
No. Why is it not obvious that if this is batel barov, then this is batel barov? Go on.
Because with lach balach, every bite you're having has some of the iser and some of the heter, but you have rov the heter. With this, you might have 100% iser or 100% heter.
Excellent, number one. And number two, if you want to understand the count, well, it's such a good svara, why do I assume this way? The counterpoint is the following, which is interesting. And I'm not inventing this. It's going to be a part of a discussion we'll have at some point. I could argue on to the contrary, why is it better when it's Yavesh B'Yavesh? Well, because when it's Yavesh B'Yavesh, every piece that I eat, it's possible that it's kosher. But by Lach B'Lach, it's a Chatzi Shir. Right? In other words, why didn't you say by Lach B'Lach, I know that some of what I'm eating is treif. So why don't you say, okay, it's not a Kezayis, B'Toch Kedei Achilas Pras, but it's still, I know I'm eating treif now. There's an answer to that question, whatever it is. But anyway, the din is rov. What is the din of min b'mino, yavesh b'yavesh? What? On the Rabbanan level.
Also rov.
So that's a machlokas rishon. Right. Yeah. Who disagrees with the mainstream opinion? The Raivid. The Raivid disagrees. The Raivid is cholay. Okay? The Raivid says you need shishim. Put the 60 there. Okay. Now, Yavesh V'Yavesh, Min D'Sh'ino Mino. What would you say
here?
So here, there's a three-way machlokas. You're going to see this in the Beis Yosef, if you get to the Beis Yosef. One position says that it's rov. That's the Tur, actually. The Tur doesn't know why. He knows that people disagree. He doesn't know why. He says, he does not convince. The Torah says rov is enough. Why is rov enough by min b'sheino mino? Why don't you need shishim?
There's no transfer of value.
There's no transfer of flavor. My grape, my orange, my apple. I don't have a grape. In other words, if I cook them together, firstly, if I cook them together, what does that make them?
Lach.
Makes them lach balach. So then I understand, I don't know which was the isser fruit, but I know that I'm tasting isser fruit. I know that I'm tasting it when I eat any part of this, right? It's all become one thing. Whereas it remains separate, it's possible that, no, it's the same rule, vitel barov. Most Rishonim in the way we paskin hold that, now, there is another opinion. I believe it's in the Hagos Shari Dura. I won't give you biography. How many of you heard of the Shari Dura before? It's a very, very important halachic work that most of us have never opened and probably never will open. The Shari Dura was written by, I think, Shimon Duran, if I'm not mistaken. That's his first name. Who was one of the Talmidim of the Maharam Rutenberg. And it was basically a halacha sefer on Isser v'Heter. I forget what else was in there. Which was a major staple in Ashkenaz. So that many of the major later Ashkenazi Rishonim, like the Marsha, I think the Marsha, like the Ramah, like the Truvas Hadeshen, wrote commentaries on the Shari Dura. Most people never open a Shari Dura, but you're going to see it quoted occasionally in the Beis Medrash and more in the Ramah. At some point, I will bring in Sefer Yeshiva. The Beis Medrash, I'm sure, has. At some point, I'll take a look just so you can see the Shari Dura. You're going to see it quoted a lot, but see in the Shari Dura, in the Hagos on the Shari Dura, not the Shari Dura itself. So it claims that Midoraisa, it requires Shishim. But the mainstream position is that it requires a rove. That's not
the Torah.
It's almost everybody. Okay. The first one the Torah I think is going to quote is Rabbeinu Baruch. But he doesn't quote the Sefer Atruma. Who's the Sefer Atruma? One of the major Baalei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Baruch. It should not be confused the Sefer Atruma with the Sefer Hatrumos. Unfortunately, many times in the Torah in the Beis Yosef, it's quoted as the Sefer Atrumos. It's not. The Sefer Atrumos is a different Sefer. We looked at it last year in one sugi we did. I don't remember who its author is. The Sefer Atrumos is a work from Spain. The Sefer Hatruma is Rabbeinu Baruch, one of the major Baalei Hatosis. Now, what is the requirement with the Rabbanim? So here you have a machlokes. Again, it would appear rove or shishin, but here it's only the tour who holds that a rove is enough, if he really holds that way. And most Rishonim hold, let's call it the Sefer Hatruma, hold that you require shishim in Rabbanan. Okay, so now let's explain why. Why do you require shishim when it comes, if assuming that we pass them at Menat Torah, it's Berov, that it's mathematics, it's not chemistry. Why is it that Yavesh V'Yavesh of Mimdish Eino Mino, why did the Rabbanan require shishim? And why did they not require shishim, according to most Rishonim, by Mimdumina? CJ?
Because if you cook it together by Yavish V'Yavish, then you will definitely require shishim.
By Mimdish Eino Mino.
Right?
So what the Rishonim say is, and he's assuming, by the way, that Tan Kikar Zaraisa, but you're correct. What the Rishonim say, the Ran says this, and others say it, is that what would happen by a tarovas of Yavesh B'Yavesh, what would happen if you cooked them together? Well, now you would have lach balach, it would flavor one another. So if you're dealing with mimimino and you cook it together, what happens? What's the din now?
Well, midoraisa, what's the din? By two things of the same flavor, three pieces, and you now cook them together, so the liquid spreads the flavor from one to the other. Mimbimino. What would the dimina Torah be? It'd be still be batel barov. So that's why they weren't gozer on this to make it asa b'shishim, because even if you cooked it, you'd worst wind up with here and here, midaraisa, it's barov. However, by mimbishaino mina, even though midaraisa, by yavishaisa barov, if you cooked it, you would wind up here. You now have tam ki'ikar, it would flavor, and a rove would not be sufficient. And that's why they would go there. That's what the Sefer HaTruma says. They would go there on mimishen amino, of yavesh b'yavesh, onto mimishen amino when it's lach b'lach. But here, now why do they go there? Now incidentally, why do they go there lach b'lach by mimbimino of shisha? They would go there onto mimishen amino, lach b'lach. In other words, one step they're concerned, one error they're concerned about.
So this can easily lead to this, and this can easily lead to this. But this would require two steps, and that the Rabbanan in this case did not make Xera. That's the position of most Rishon. Yes.
In Mishnah Bevino, Yavish B'Yavish, top left corner, where does it say?
Hago Sharei Dura says that Minat Torah, that robe is not enough. There's a very brief line. If you have, open your Beis Yosef for a second. Do you have it here? I will try to let you know generally if I know. Normally we start with the Gemara, but at some points I'll let you know whether you need your idea or the Gemara. I'll try to avoid having to have you schlep both. But in the meantime, for those who have their Beis Yosef, in Simon Kuftes, where is it? I thought it's in the Beis Yosef, unless it's in. It might be in the Darkei Moshe. Yes, the Darkei Moshe on the top right side of the page. Letter Aleph of the Darkei Moshe. Uvago Sharei Dura B'Shem Maharizal, that's the Truma Sadeshen, Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin. That's the way they write his name. They're not dyslexic. I know it should have been Mem Hei Resh Yud Aleph, Marena Harav Yisrael Israelin, but it's always written Mahar E. I don't know why, but that's what it is. Okay, fine.
It's a chachita.
If I'm not mistaken, I couldn't find the Hagoth Shari Dura when I looked in the Shari Dura, so I really can't explain to you what that chita is. But that is a minority position. The majority position is that Midoraisitz Barok and Rabbanon, they were Machmir. Okay. Are there any questions about this? This is something that you're going to want to commit to memory and review. It's basic Aleph Beis of Taruvos, but it's going to come up all over the place, again and again and again. You just have to know what is Mimimino versus Mimishen Amino, Lach Balach Yavish B'Yavish, and Lach Locus about Tanam Ki'ikar. And so these are going to be recurring things. Are there any questions about that?
Okay. Let me, before we jump in to our Maariv HaKomos, which we may not do today, I wanted to just give you a very brief overview of what the Torah is going to do, what's going to be discussed. The Torah begins Simen Tzadi Ches, dealing with the basic rules of Lach Balach. I'm starting in Kuftes, which is Yavesh B'Yavesh, because I think that you will find it a little bit easier, and a, sort of a good way to get started, and it's kind of stimulating as well, especially if you look at the last question on the Maariv HaKomos. But the tour begins Simen Tzadi Ches with the discussion of a tarobes of Lach Balach. And here, he deals with both Mim B'Sheinu Mino and Mim B'Mino. And the observation that he makes is that there's a machlokas harishonim, whether or not tam ki ikar is midoraisa or midrabanan, namely, minat Torah, does Mim B'Sheinu Mino require shishim, or does it require less than shishim? And even if you could taste it, it's mutar minat Torah. Whatever the shear is below that is a big machlokas. Okay, then the Torah talks about Mim B'Mino. Now, I already told you Mim B'Mino is batel min haTorah, how? By lach belach.
Rove.
Both of them, it's batel b'rov. Now, I lied. I didn't lie, but it's a big machlokas of Tanaim, the way the Gemara presents it. There is a sheet in the Tanaim, and more importantly, more explicitly in Amoraim. In the Tanaim, it's a so to say with Sheetas Rabbi Yehuda, that there is no bitel min haTorah by min b'mina. Where did he come up with this idea that there's no bitel min haTorah min b'mina? So Yom HaNoraim is coming. And if you learn the Avodah on Yom HaKippurim, so you will see that or you learn the Mishnayos in Yoma, that the Kohen Gadol, after sprinkling inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then on the outside of the Paroches, with the blood of the Par, and the blood of the Sire, what does he take with the two bloods? What does he do with the two bloods? He mixes them together.
And then what does he do with that blood? He puts it on the Mizbeach. And the Torah says, V'lakach midam apar midam asair v'nasan al-karnos ha-mizbeach soviv. In Parshas Achrimos. So the Gemara comments, Edavar yadua, the dam hapar is meruba midam asair. I don't want to explain, there's questions about that. But the bottom line is, there's more blood of the par than the sire there. And yet, and he mixes them together. And yet, what does the Torah describe it? How does it label this? As midama par, midama sa'ir. Even though there's a rove of dam, of par, over dam of sa'ir, the Torah, it treats them as if they both still exist. Rabbi Yehuda, the way the Gemara explains, infers from that, that min bimino has no bittel. Min bimino has no bittel. We don't paskin that way. There's a lot to be said on that. I'm not going to say another word now. I'll leave you in suspense for a couple of months. Until we get to deal with that. There's lots of fascinating issue. Okay. Simen Sadi Tes, that's really what Simen Sadi Ches is about. Simen Sadi Tes deals primarily with how do you calculate when one food gets mixed into another. The balabuster or the balabus, whoever does the cooking in your house, is cooking, and a piece of cheese falls into the pot. Or better, a piece of meat falls into this dairy stew. And you see it fall, oh my God, and you reach and you grab and you throw it out. And the question is it usur or not? How do you calculate it? You'll say, oh, shishim. Okay, but I don't have shishim in the milk stuff. But how long was that piece of meat in there? It was hardly there. It was cooking there for, you mean to say, I pulled it out. How much meat is in the milk thing? Well, I'm holding the meat here. How much of this meat got into the milk thing? How are you mishayer? That's a discussion. The same thing is true when you cook in kalim that might have absorbed its own discussion of non-kosher materials. How do you determine how much iser fell into the heter? The last thing that Simen Sadi Tes deals with, that Alter jumped on before, I think it was, is the question of ein mevatlin iser lechatchila, right? Which comes up in two very simple ways. Number one is, I have a little extra stuff, which is treif, and you know, I have a lot of guests who are coming, so I could always use a little bit extra in my food. So can I just like toss the treif stuff in? It's going to be batel. I have more than shishim against it. Or a more logical example is, let's take my pot of, I don't want to use milk and meat, that's a terrible example, but let's say somehow there was a little bit of non-kosher, what? No, that's more complicated. Let's take the following. Let's say I'm cooking and some chaylev. Don't ask me what I have chaylev in my house for. We don't have most of these. Many of these shaylevs don't come up anymore because treif food never enters our house. But if you lived in a world in which people handle their own meat, you have treif food in your house all the time. You have chaylev and you have dam, the starters. I don't expect any of us would have chazir in our house, but chaylev and dam you could have. So some chaylev falls into the pot and there's not shishim. And you can even taste the chaylev. So I come up with a brilliant idea. You know what I'm going to do? The chaylev fell into my pasta. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to add more pasta. I'll wind up with shishim. That's also called a mevatlin issur. That's mevatlin issur lechatchila. You're not allowed to do that. If you did that b'mezid, there are penalties that are associated with it. Okay. Simen kuf, starting simen kuf for like... Simen Kuf and Simen Kuf Aleph deal with an issue that belongs to what we're doing, actually. One you encountered already. Two of them you encountered already. One is called the Din of Beria. Let's say I have an entire bug that falls into my soup, and I can't find the bug. Now, it's batel b'shishim, but the halacha is I'm not allowed to eat it. Why? Because Beria, you saw this in the Gemara, Beria lo betela. Why is Beria lo betela? I know the Gemara says so. Why? So this offers a window into what does bittel mean? What does it mean to have bittel? It's, by the way, you could also understand that one vantage point, it should be easier to be mevatel two things of different flavors than two things of the same flavor, even though that's not the way we paskin. It does explain the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, that mem amino is not batel. What would the svara be? What does bittel mean? Not a sure question.
It's almost like it's not there.
Exactly. Thank you. It's as if it's not there. Now, when a little bit of chazer schmaltz falls into my ground beef, and I can't taste it, it's not there. Why? Well, I'm never going to be eating something where you say, well, I'm eating chazer schmaltz right now, but I don't know that I'm eating it, because I don't know which one it is. No. You don't taste it. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore. if I have my three pieces of salami, or even if I, let's say it's my ground beef is, but my beef is ground up together, am I, at any point can I say that I'm eating non-kosher beef? Or can I say at any point that I'm tasting non-kosher beef? What? Yes, you can. Because I'm tasting beef the entire time. And the beef I'm tasting is an amalgamation of the taste of the beef, the taste of the kosher beef and the non-kosher beef.
It's in the vino. It's all the same flavor.
I didn't say, can you detect it? I'm asking, are you at any point eating an effect and tasting non-kosher beef? The answer is yes. Because I'm tasting beef the entire time. It's all contributing. I know one is contributing more. Whereas when it comes to Mindashe Amino, once it's batel, I can never taste the chaser shmalt. I don't taste the pork. It's not there. So that's how you could sort of see the other side. Bittul means it's ki'ilu eino. Now, what the halacha assumes is that sometimes you have things that are so chashuv. So we don't hold that way, Bensia. We hold that mibamino is batel. But sometimes you have something that is so chashuv, you can't say like it doesn't exist. You can't say it doesn't exist. Let me give you something also to reinforce that idea of bittul from elsewhere. Let's say I have treif yeast. Let's say it's Sa'or Shel Trula. I'm not a Kohen. Anyone have any Kohanim? You're a Kohen.
Yeah.
I should have known that. Okay. Good. So you're going to get Kohen questions. You don't have to know the answers, but you'll be the Kohen example. Unless it's a bad thing, we'll use it. Okay. So for Jared, it's not a problem. For everybody else, the Sa'or Shel Truma gets mixed in to the flour, to the dough, and it causes it to rise. Okay. So let me ask you a question. What proportion of yeast is there generally in a dough, yeast to dough? More or less than a 60th?
Less.
Far less than a 60th. Now, question number two. Can you taste the yeast when the bread is done? No, you can't. So do we say that it's batel? Parallel to this is, let's say I have cheese and milk, and I want to make cheese, and I have non-kosher rennet. And non-kosher, I don't want to talk about how you get truly non-kosher rennet. I have non-kosher rennet. And I put a little in. I put in less than 60th, and it's a catalyst, and magic. All of a sudden, I have cheese. Not all of a sudden, but it takes a little time, and I have cheese. Am I allowed to eat that cheese?
No.
Why not? You can't taste the rennet. It's batel b'shishim. So what's the issue, Kesser?
Because the rennet was integral in creating the cheese.
So it had a transformative impact. We call this a davar hamamid. Midoraisa, by the way, it's batel, but midrabanan, they say it's not batel. Why? Because the impact of it is recognizable, and therefore it's as if the rennet still exists. You can't say the rennet is batel ha'avar min ha'olam. Even though you can't taste it, even though it was less than a 60th, even though you can't see it, because it left its mark. Pretty much every one of these dinah, by the way, that we're talking about now are derabanan. Virtually everyone, the dinah beri lo betela, I know there are people who go meshugana about insects in their whatever, you know, whether it's their vegetables, it's their water. I'm not saying mutar asa, I'm just telling you the shayla is the rabbanon shayla. Beri is b'teila min ha-Torah. It's only mit the rabbanon. Chati haruya l'skabe, that you touched upon, which is simen kuf aleph. Beri is simen kuf. Simen kuf aleph, I think is chati haruya l'skabe. Said that's not batel, that's always mimimino. They look the same. That's only mit the rabbanon. Almost all these dinim are mit the rabbanon. Right? Min ha-Torah, the only thing that might be mit the raisa, in other words, in situations where you have a rove, but it's not batel min ha-Torah, it would be tam. That's the only time, according to most Rishonim. I know him.
For all these cases
of
Jerubana, why is any zera at all? Because there's no unto anything with rennet or yeast or bottoms.
I don't know. It's a good question. I never, I haven't seen as to why anybody say why is it, other than the sfar that I've offered you, why make the zera the Rabbanan? Is there an example of a deraisa by these things? I don't know. I have to think about it. Okay. Now,
sourdough. That's Hamisha Melah B'Pesach.
Yeah.
That's.
But again, you can't, when you make bread with it. Well, I'm sorry, what are you suggesting?
It's saying that's something that's D'Oraisa.
No. Chametz not being bought on Pesach to the Rabbanan.
On Pesach.
On Pesach. Chametz not being bought to the Rabbanan.
On Pesach, you use that sourdough.
Well, if you use that sourdough to make bread, the bread is chametz. No, I know that's what, but let's say you didn't put sourdough, and let's say the wild yeast just fell in from the air, which will happen if you give it enough time.
Right?
It's chametz. The problem is, the bread is usher not because of the sa'or that the tarov is sa'or, it's usher because it's chametz.
Well, that's the institution of chametz. It's
supposed to be an expansion of this kind of sour.
I know, whatever it is, but the bottom line is that's not because, and we don't say because the sour is in butter, we say because that's called chametz. Okay, Siman Kuf Beis deals with something called a davar sheish lamatirin that's not batal. We won't talk about that now. Now, I'm not going to talk about what Kuf Gimel and Kuf Dalet deal with what's called nosein tam lefgam. Very fascinating tidbit which you deal with frequently in Shilas. Your pot, someone accidentally cooks something milchuk in a fleshik pot. And what, some of you may know, what's the first question the rabbi asks? When was the pot last used? That's based upon the principle that, number one, a pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours, the assumption is that the belios, the absorptions at that point, we'll talk about them when we get there, are pegumim. They detract generally, unless the food is sharp, they detract from the flavor of the food that's been cooked in it. And therefore, the answer is that generally, if you cooked milchiks in a fleshed pot that hadn't been used for 24 hours, the pot may be required koshering, but the food is kosher. What? No, let's wait on that question. I want to just finish that. Now, Siman Kuf He, which is one of the, probably the second hardest siman, or maybe the hardest siman, deals with flavor transfer. There are, generally speaking, three mechanisms of flavor transfer. Now, here we're talking about chemistry. We're not talking about mathematics. There are three mechanisms of flavor transfer that the Gemara deals with, three categories. One is bishul. Bishul means heat with liquid that diffuses flavor. Number two is... So there really, I guess, it's four, but tzli. There are two companions. Tzli, which means the heat of fire without a liquid medium. It means two things that are touching one another when they're essentially dry. Right? If I take a piece of pork and a piece of meat and I'm roasting them together, touching one another, the flavor doesn't generally diffuse as much as it would as if I took them and put them in a pot with liquid, which is true, by the way. Now, the other two things that are dealt with here are kavush, if you pickle things together. Pickling means to soak in a liquid or soak together in a liquid. After a certain amount of time, depending on what the liquid is, flavor transfers, which is true. And we say that kavush is treated like mevushal. We'll explain what that means when we get there. And if you salt things together, we say maliach is like roteach of tzli. It's like you roasted them together. It creates also a flavor transfer. I will skip for the moment Kuf Vav and Kuf Zayin, which deal with two very minor issues. And then Siman Kuf Ches deals with flavor transfer as well, known as Reach. Using one oven for cooking two things, maybe at the same time, maybe not, where one is treif, one is kosher, one is milkas, one is meat. What is the status of what is known as Reach and things that are related to that? So we will discuss that as well. Siman Kuf Tes, what we are dealing with now, until the end, deal with mathematics. Now, some of what we have seen earlier relates to it, meaning Chaticha Shenari of Eskaved relates to mathematics. In other words, it's always something which is Yavesh B'Yavesh. It's not chemistry. If you take, for example, let me give the following example. I have 60 pieces of regular Chatichos. Don't ask how you have this. I'm sorry. I have 60 Chatichos Aruy Eskaved which are kosher, one which is treif. And I cook them together. Can I eat anything? If you learn the Mishnah, you know the answer to this question. I make a stew, and I cook 61 pieces of chatichas aruy skabi together. One is treif, 60 are kosher. Can I eat anything? And I will finish with this for now. You learn this, it's in the Mishnah. What's the din by Gid? The answer is, I can eat the soup. If I don't know which is the chaticha real iskabed, I got to throw all the chatichas out, but I can eat the soup. Why can I eat the soup? Why can't I eat the soup? Why would you think I couldn't? Why would you think I couldn't eat the soup? Because the nesinas tam of? Yeah, but the tam of the chaticha real iskabed is not usr. The tam is not a chaticha of ruyah skabed. Let's say, it's clear from the Mishnah, let's say I cooked it in the rotev, and I know which is the chaticha, which is treif, and I pull it out. What's the din then? According to the Mishnah, can I eat the other chatichos? Yes. Right? As long as I have shishim, can I get that chaticha ruyah skabed? In other words, the chaticha ruyah skabed, the tam of the piece, is batal b'shishim. But the piece, when it stands, when it's extant, is not batel b'shishim. Right? That's a mathematics issue, not a chemistry issue. You're not allowed to do this l'chatchila, but if there were no rabbinic prohibition or prohibition, whether it's the rice of the rabbanon, you know you could solve the problem l'chatchila. Chop every piece of the meat in half. It will no longer be a chaticha with escapade, and that will be batel. Because it's not the ta'am that's not batel. It's the piece when it's extant. It's so chashuv when it's extant, the filet mignon you have is so chashuv, it can't be batel. Once you chop it up, it's not a filet mignon anymore. It's chopped meat. The ta'am was always batel. So anyway... that chatichal riskabe, which is talked about earlier, really belongs to our mathematical area. So Simon Kuftes and Kufyud and Kufyud Aleph are going to be mathematics. We're not going to do, at least when we finish Kuftes, we're going to go back to the beginning. But nonetheless, we will hopefully, before the end of Tarovis, get to look at Simon Kufyud and Simon Kufyud Aleph. Okay.